Hi, Jeremy Brecker. Welcome again to KBOO.
Hi, Bill. Good to be with you.
Jeremy Brecker co-founded the Labor Network for Sustainability. He's an activist, a historian, a writer, over 10 really wonderful books. The most recent books are on the environment and climate change, including Save the Humans, Common Preservation in Action, also Climate Insurgency. His early book, Strike, it's now updated, second edition. It explored the extent to which ordinary working people acting on their own have through the decades thought, planned, drawn lessons from their own experience, organized themselves, taken action in common, and prevailed. More recently, he's been studying coups and attempted coups, particularly how ambitious autocrats and dictators and their friends have been defeated, forced to step aside by mass popular nonviolent movements, and how those mass movements got organized. He's distilled that into an important article, How We Should Defend Against the Impending Trump Coup. So, Jeremy Brecker, first tell us about Trump, what he's signaled, and the action he's taken to prepare for, it looks like, very likely for stealing the election, and then discuss how we can defeat him through those mass movements.
Well, Donald Trump has signaled even from before the time he was first elected that if he didn't like the results of an election, he would just ignore them and proclaim that they were fraudulent and phony. He did that all the way back in 2016, and he's been doing it repeatedly in the run-up to the 2020 election, and clearly signaling to his followers that they should, as he said, form an army of 50,000 to go to the polling places and make sure that there was nothing along the line of stealing an election. One can only imagine what means they will use to make that happen. We've had repeated efforts by local Republican parties to disenfranchise large numbers of people, to prevent open polls for early voting, and a wide range of other techniques that are obviously designed to suppress the vote. And we've had Trump's attacks on the post office and a statement that mail-in ballots are phony and illegitimate, all of this laying the groundwork for many different possible ways of interfering with a full count of the election. A way of describing this is to say that this is a coup in the making. Now, I don't think that the word is extreme. This is an attempt to use that old and ugly word of American politics, an attempt to usurp power and create an illegal regime that will rule not based on the democratic decision of the American people to choose their own leaders, but on the power of an autocrat to interfere with that process and seize power.
So, Jeremy, you've written about how coups by other would-be dictators and autocrats, how they've been defeated. Now, give us an example and the characteristics of the movements that have defeated coups.
Yeah. The United States does not really have a tradition of coups, and we also don't have a tradition of resisting undemocratic seizures of power through mass action. But worldwide, there is strong tradition of doing so. And as a matter of fact, there are two short studies that between them examined 15 coups around the world where civilian resistance has stopped and rolled back and just put an end to 13 of those 15 coups. The basic lesson is that the military leaders or a criminal conspiracy, a would-be emperor or would-be dictator can seize government buildings and seem to be in control of the capital and the government. But what really determines control is not physical possession of the Capitol building or the presidential palace. It is whether the people recognize the legitimacy of the people who are holding the coup, who are usurping power, and whether they cooperate with it or refuse to cooperate with it. And non-recognition and non-cooperation on the part of millions and millions of people and on the part of a wide range of social institutions is the key to defeating coups. And where you have non-cooperation and non-recognition on a wide scale, the usual thing that happens is that the coups collapse, because they may give orders, they may threaten people, but if nobody recognizes their right to give orders, no one recognizes their right to be the government, nobody is willing to obey and, in fact, engage in disobedience in an active way, there's no way that the coup can govern. And that has been the experience all over the world over and over again. A very good example was the Philippines, where the dictator Marcos called elections and used assassinations and vote rigging and all kinds of techniques to rig the election. But the opponents did poll watching and identified the extent to which Marcos was actually defeated. When he claimed victory, then hundreds of thousands and eventually millions of people went out into the streets. The military officials began defecting from the Marcos regime, refused to fire on the people in the streets. The priests climbed up on the tanks and led a million people, including soldiers, in prayer outside the presidential palace. And finally, the United States took their boy Marcos and said, you know what, maybe it's time for you to leave. That gives an example of how the power actually works.
Yeah, you described it as people power versus autocratic power. This is Cable Radio. Bill Resnick here talking to Jeremy Brecker, an activist, a historian, a writer. Jeremy, across the country, there's movements resisting the Trump effort to steal the election. Here in Portland, we're circulating a pledge to take action, pledge to people to commit themselves to action, and also a petition demanding that public officials assert control of the police and require them to act according to their constitutional and state duties. In your writing on coups and attempted coups, in many ways when police and military are ordered by the autocrat to control civilians and fire on them if they do not disperse, when the demonstrators refuse to accept and obey orders, you've written about the conditions for that to happen. In fact, right after the election, probably, there's going to be huge demonstrations and movements. What are the conditions to make sure that the police and then the army are not wantonly beating, arresting, and killing?
Well, there's no guarantees in any mass movement, and certainly not in a situation with essentially a coup. We have to remember that even constitutionally, Trump will remain president for about 2 months after the election, and we can expect a huge amount of disinformation and interference, impossible to say how much, right-wing violence, militia activity, that is to say, armed gangs calling themselves militias, disrupting polling places and attacking demonstrators. The first thing I would say is that we need to build a broad support, which is already developing, around the idea that a fair election is not just a question of Biden against Trump or Democrats against Republicans, but this is a fundamental question of our ability as a people to govern ourselves and choose our own government, making clear that this really represents the interests of the whole people. Secondly, defining the strategy as a peaceful rising of the whole people for preserving democracy. And the military and police forces, intelligence forces, the thing that's most likely to either win them over or persuade them to remain neutral is something that clearly doesn't look like a political faction, but looks like a rising of the great majority of people to achieve the restoration of democracy by peaceful means. Now, the Trump strategy clearly involves trying to portray and tell a story of violent left-wing threat and of course, there's a strong racial component to this, a violent threat from those terrible people of color, black people, immigrants, minorities of all kinds that are threatening the safety and well-being of the real Americans. That's the story that they will be trying to tell. And to the extent that we play into that story and make it credible, we will be creating a situation where both the armed right wing and the police forces and other security forces will have a easy opportunity to say, oh, yes, Trump is right. All this activity is a violent threat to the American way. And so, of course, we are going to be right in whatever we choose to do, whether it's arresting peaceful demonstrators or whether it's allowing them to be shot down in the streets.
They're going to try and describe us as this group of leftists who are trying to impose a communist dictatorship on our country.
Right. And that's actually, they have already been describing in the right-wing media the resistance to a Trump coup as, in fact, just a cover for a left-wing coup. So there's no question that that's already the tact that they're trying to take. And I think that even more than in most situations, a disciplined nonviolence with an agreement by people who are participating that they will be nonviolent and they will help keep others nonviolent is a critical component of an effective resistance. You don't have to believe that nonviolence is valid under all circumstances. You don't have to believe that violence is wrong under all circumstances to see that in this situation, nothing could play more into Trump's hands than a violent response on the part of demonstrators. So I think that that is one crucial part of an effective strategy for dealing not only with Trump, but with the police and other security forces, which are probably going to be on the fence, at least initially, not wanting to appear to be part of a Trump conspiracy, but also wanting to assert their authority and decision-making power, and in some cases, sympathetic to the right and white supremacist forces. The best thing that we can do is to create a situation where repressiveness is a losing proposition for them, a loss to their power and their legitimacy. That is the most effective way to deal with them. It's not a strategy that can prevent them from ever doing false arrests, using violence, but taking the benefit of that and making it be a big liability is the most effective way to limit their temptation to brutality and criminal repression.
Yeah, even if there are elements of the police and army who really want to support Trump, there are also elements that see that as an enormous risk to themselves and to the putting it in crude materials terms, the cushy life that they've been having in the United States, especially since Trump has been so erratic and crazy and attacking the army. And in any event, yes, if we split the police, they will likely stay in the barracks and stay neutral and maybe even disarm some of the militias who have threatened the police and killed several and killed a lot of Americans. Jeremy, it seems to me if we succeed in creating this popular upsurge, determined, powerful, democratic forces, nonviolent, to stop Trump, then that process will come a long way to building forces that can actually powerfully influence the Biden administration and all of U.S. politics. Lots of important issues facing us. There are many challenges, but also responding to them could really build a far more democratic country.
I think that if we're able to see the democracy, even the flawed democracy that we're used to, is preserved and we have a democratically elected government, it will be subject to mass mobilization of the population and the feeling of people that they have a right to decide, a right to determine what their government does. that will have a profound effect. A major objective of the right, and we'll say specifically the Republican right in the political system, has been to not only to disenfranchise people, but to make them say, what does it matter? What's the point? We're not going to get anything. We're not going to achieve anything. Even if we win elections, it's all going to be blocked by the power of the corporations and the power of the right wing of the Republican Party and the successors to the Tea Party. And if there is a successful mass movement that is able to prevent and roll back a coup and reestablish even the rudiments of a democratic governance, that will give an enormous sense of power to people. Whatever government is actually installed, whatever individuals are in the positions of office, they will have to be responsive to popular desires and popular wishes and popular action in a way that will have a major impact on the horizon of possibility in the next period.
Jeremy Brecker, thanks so much for talking to us today.
Thank you, and look forward to talking more, hopefully in a situation where we can be talking about positive possibilities for democracy beyond the immediate necessity of saving democracy.
Keep up the good work.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Give me a bomb, a Molotov.
It's a coup d'etat.
Generalissimo's the step chop. Step on a line, next on a block. Armies marching through the streets. Trust the shot, trust will need